Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
But he could, if he's tapping it from Morden, as opposed to doing it himself.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
I haven't really thought about that part of it, but I guess that would probably be true. I mean, that would be the most dramatic, to have them not fighting side by side, but instead of having two separate areas.
Rand has people around him that are really good generals. Matt is a good general. Ruark is, you know, really commands the IO really well.
I think so. I do think that Lon will survive the last battle.
Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. Hi, I'm Ben.
And this is Carrie. The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series written by Robert Jordan, and he's currently writing book 12, so it's coming soon.
And I'm Jason, and well, first off, I want to say we apologize for the delay in episode number 10. We had some scheduling issues, but everything is all set to go now.
Hey, we've had a lot of feedback, probably because of the extra time you guys have had to feedback, but we've had a lot of feedback from our last episode. We really appreciated you guys. We enjoy hearing what you have to say about us, and good, bad, ugly, we like to hear it all. So thank you. Keep the input coming.
And we just want to say and give everyone a reminder that the Fourth Age podcast is going to be live at Dragon Con this year. Dragon Con is actually going to take place September 1st through the 4th. And what our plan is right now is that we're going to record the Fourth Age podcast live on Saturday morning. I believe it's actually Saturday afternoon at about 1 p.m. That's the tentative schedule right now, provided we get everything we need. So we'll see everyone there.
There's also some new news on the Wheel of Time graphic novels done by Red Eagle, and this time Red Eagle teams up with Alias Enterprises, and there's some info on that. It's from Red Eagle, the company behind the New Spring Comics, and Alias Entertainment, and they're about it's about their partnership that they're going to produce a new graphic novel and comic content, including some new stuff based on the Wheel of Time. Doesn't really explain much of what it's going to be, except that it's something new, so we can look forward to seeing that. There, if you go to DragonMount.com, there is a link to Red Eagle's website and Alias Enterprises' website, so go there to check it out.
I do want to thank all of our listeners, and thanks so much for sending in. If anybody remembers from the previous podcasts, I was trying to think of the first fantasy series that I ever read, and I remembered that it was... that it was a guy with a hand, and it was kind of like a demon hand. And thanks to everyone who sent in. I'm not sure exactly who it was that pointed me in the right direction, but I was able to find the series. It was called The Greyhawk Adventure, and the name of one of the books is actually The Demon Hand. That's how I was able to find it. So thanks, everyone, so much for sending in the responses to that. I think I'm going to go back and read that series when I'm finished with my third reread, actually, of The Wheel of Time. Speaking of that, I'm actually going to go right now into my Wheel of Time journal. There is going to be some spoilers starting right now, even though I'm talking about the first book. There's going to be some, I'll say minor spoilers. There's no major spoilers during this part anyway, this episode. What I'm going to be talking about is that chapters 11 through 15 of The Eye of the World, the first book. I'm only actually doing 5 chapters this week because there was a lot of different things that happened. The people that we're dealing with is the party that's leaving from the Two Rivers going to Terran Ferry. We have Maureen, Lon, Rand, Matt, Perrin, Egwene, and Tom. They are traveling, like I said, from the Two Rivers to Terran Ferry. They're traveling really quick, traveling as hard as they can. A couple things that I noticed is that Rand is concerned with Egwene. There's kind of a feeling in the first and second time I read this, the second time more, when I read this, I noticed that it almost seems like he's trying to set up a romance between Rand and Egwene. Usually I get good ideas of, hints that authors throw out, and I usually am able to tell exactly what's going on. And I thought that was going to be something that happened in the other books. And as we know, it really doesn't happen in the future books. They both kind of go their separate ways. Once they do get to Terran Ferry, I did notice a couple other things. Lon knows where to go and exactly what to do, and it really feels like it's the first time that the kids from the Two Rivers are really in something that's over their head. They're kind of clueless. Lon is just taking care of business, of course, and it really feels like they're in over their head, especially being in a new town. Also at the ferry, Tom and Warren have a moment where he twirls his knives and she kind of laughs at him. And I didn't pick this up, but it is something that does hint to a relationship now that we know about the later books. So I thought there was something between Rand and Egwene, and I didn't know anything about Tom and Warren, but well, that's just the way it is, I guess. Sometimes you just don't know. So after that, of course, they cross the river, and Walrein sinks the ferry, and Rand actually shivers when she does it, which is actually a clue that Rand is actually going to be able to tell, sort of, when females are using the One Power. After that, Walrein actually starts teaching Egwene about the One Power, and she also mentions in the last part of the chapter that Egwene could be one day the Amarillan seat, which is, as everyone here knows, that it's very significant in the future books. Lon also starts to teach Rand, Perrin, and Matt how to use their weapons, sword, axe, and bow, respectively. Although Matt doesn't really use the bow too much in the series, and Perrin actually gives up the axe, but Rand, of course, very much, this is his first exposure to actually using the sword and using his Harrenmark blade that he was given from his father. Quote unquote father, I'll say that. Tom mentions some of the Carithian prophecy, the Stone of Tyr will never fall until the people of Dragon come to the stone, and then the other part where the stone will never fall till the sword that cannot be touched is wielded by the dragon's hand. That alludes to a bigger theory that's bigger throughout the rest of the books. They do arrive in the next city, Berlun, where the White Cloaks are in town. This is an important chapter because Min is introduced here, and there are some Min has some prophecies of her own. I won't talk about those because we're actually going to try and do a whole show dedicated to prophecies, which should be fun. Also, during this chapter, Rand has his dream of Balzamon in the room. Which I always remember is one of my favorite scenes in the books, where he offers, Balzamine offers him wine, and Rand, of course, almost drinks it and then doesn't, and then he says, of course, you know, you're being a tool for the Aes Sedai and this and that. All of them have the same type dreams, and they do confide in Tom, and he suggests that they keep quiet about it and don't really tell anyone else, which suggests a relationship between those four, Tom and the three boys, which kind of gets down to a personal level with those four. Also, Rand meets Padden Fain in the street, who's acting really weird. Besides the first couple chapters, this is the only other time, well, at least in the first book so far, that Padden Fain is actually brought back up. And again, it alludes to another part later in the books. And then, of course, one of the funniest scenes in the whole books is when Rand and Matt run into the White Cloaks, and Matt knocks down the barrels and splashes mud on them, and then they think Rand did it. And Rand really sticks up for himself there, which it's kind of funny because he doesn't later in the book, and then he regains that, you know, I'm going to stick up for myself later on in, you know, books 4 or 5, and after he learns, of course, that he's the dragon reborn. And then right at the end, chapter 15, that's actually when Nynaeve gets to the inn, and I think everyone knows what's coming there. So that's chapters 11 through 15 of the Wheel of Time Journal. Next week, the next episode, I'll be doing hopefully 10 more chapters. We'll see what happens in the next 5 chapters, see if we can get all that in.
Yeah, you know, I never, I always thought, I think everybody, well, unless you're really, you have some kind of different intuition, but I always thought in the first part that it was going to be Rand and Egwene too, because I think that's the way, you know, Robert Jordan wrote it, and I never would have picked up on Tom and Moraine, so you're not the only one, because that definitely was Rand and Egwene who I thought it was going to go throughout the series and, you know, be the two of them. I never would have guessed anything like what's happened so far at all.
Yeah, I think Rand is better off. I think Rand is better off with Elaine, and the other two women, they're, yeah, whatever. But I don't think he lost out on too much, losing out on Egwene. But anyway, I think it's time for some crazy theories. What do you guys think?
I think so.
Sounds good.
All right. I've got a mini crazy theory before I I do my real crazy theory. As Jason is rereading the books, I have my girlfriend who is reading the books for the very first time, and she's been on book 5 for quite some time. She really struggled through the first half of book 5, but after that, she burned through the last half of it, and I've been, you know, doing this podcast and trying to keep, you know, her from hearing it so she doesn't get spoilers and all that and find out about Moraine, which, you know, she dies and dies in book 5. That's a spoiler, by the way. And there's a lot more spoilers coming up, so just beware. But she sort of dies in book 5, but she didn't know that, but I told her. She, you know, texted me one night, "Oh my gosh, Moraine is dead." I was like, there's more, keep reading. And so she kept reading, and then she's like, "So who killed Osmodian? Was it Moraine?" And that was the first person she thought had killed Osmodian. So I'm not going to go into it because not many people think Moraine killed Osmodian. But that's what she thought. That was her first guess. So that's my mini crazy theory. My second crazy theory is actually right from the Dragonmount forums. And if you were wanting to go and look at this, you could. And it actually is, it has a bit of merit. It's not totally outlandish. I happen to personally disagree with it, but I'm just going to get right into it. I'm actually going to read a bit of the guy's topic. It says, "This is my first topic. Sorry if you guys are tired of this discussion. But I think Taim, Mazrim Taim, is a Forsaken. I think he is Moradin. I don't have conclusive evidence for it, and I might be wrong. I would like to hear what you guys think. These are my reasons." And he gives 9 reasons, and I'm going to give you the ones that I think are most persuasive to his cause. Number 1, Osmodian was killed at the same time that Taim appeared to Rand and about the same place. I think that actually is pretty relevant stuff. The number 2 point he brought up was, how did he get the seal on the Dark One's prison? He, you know, showed up, gave it to Rand, and said that he's had it for some time. Where did he get it? Was he a Dark One? That's one of the points he brings up. If he was a Forsaken, that he might have access to that, and he was using it to try and, you know, lure him in. Min, this is another one of the things, Min says he has a bloody past and a bloody future, and a Forsaken would certainly, have a bloody past and a bloody future. Another one of the points he made is, how did he hold off the madness so long? Rand really has, we can tell the taint affected him very much in the later books through his sickness, and how did he manage to hold off the sickness and the taint altogether? It would be very possible if he was a if he was Forsaken. And in Moradin's point of view, it suggests some stuff on the board. The Fisher stood waiting, and it was talking about the game that they used to play way back in the back in the Age of Legends. The game. Do you guys recall that? Do you know the name of the? What was the name of the game? You guys were saying it to me, I know.
I can't remember. It's like right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, it was very hard to lose when you play both sides of the board. And that is sort of an eerie statement, playing both sides of the board. Moradin would, you know, be in good position if he could play a good guy and a bad guy. And therefore, he concludes that it is Taim. So he has some good points, but I actually happen to disagree with this. I think that I think it's pretty common, the theory that Ishamael is Moradin, that he's been reincarnated, because we do know that Ishamael was not balefired. He was killed by Rand with, he was killed with Kalendor, wasn't he? Didn't he stab him with Kalendor? I think he stabbed him with Kalendor at the end of Book 3. And so we know the Dark Lord can bring people back. He's done it with Lanfear, who we believe is Sindane, and he's done it with some other ones. some of them didn't last that long, but he's brought back other Forsaken to life. So it makes sense that he would bring back someone else, and Ishamael certainly would be worthy of the name Moradin, and Moradin means death. I think it even mentions that in one of the books, no one else would be worthy to be called deaf. And so I think that's pretty conclusive proof to me that Eshamayel, I think that's sort of the conventional theory, and I like crazy theories, but I think I'm actually going to go with the conventional theory that Eshamayel is Moradin. He's nameless. He, for some reason, has some sort of plan with Rand to keep him alive, but that's my theory. It's crazy.
I don't think it's too crazy. I mean, it is crazy. I do 100% believe that Eshamayel was brought back as Moradin. But I had kind of an inkling that Taim was at least linked to him. I don't think that he's actually him, but I think that he has some kind of link to Moradin. Doesn't he use his colors in the Moradin's favorite colors? Was it red and black in the palace he had built? Yeah, and doesn't he have the stones and stuff in red and black and all that? But I think that maybe he's more like Moradin's man or something, and maybe he's held off the taint because he's one of the Dreadlords, right? And the Great Lord can give protection against the taint, even though he's not a Forsaken. Maybe he's like the next step below.
I certainly think that he can receive protection from being a Dark Friend. That'll keep him from being, you know, affected by the taint. But I still think that, you know, he might be sort of like Alviarin for the Aes Sedai, you know? Holds a lot of power, but, you know, sort of marked, but not exactly...
But not forsaken materially.
Yeah, not forsaken.
Not yet, but no.
Well, here's what I think in what you were saying. I actually think that I think he's a new Forsaken. I don't see why he couldn't be.
Ooh, I like that crazy theory.
I always wondered if they were going to make, that's why I said, yeah, like, are they going to have new Forsaken, or is it just the original 13? That'd be cool.
I think if there's anyone that's a candidate to be, a Forsaken from the Third Age, that he would be the perfect candidate. I mean, and it goes along with what you were saying before, Ben, about the crazy theory and the facts that back up that Taim is Moradin. The same could stand true. I mean, if Moradin is actually, you know, teaching Taim or making him or is leading him on the path to actually being Forsaken. He is playing both sides of the board if that's the case.
That certainly would be a good point. I don't think, I certainly can't recall it. Is there something saying that the 13 are the 13 Forsaken and there aren't any more or less was that mentioned at all? Because for some reason I got the impression that becoming a new Forsaken, whenever Alviarin was marked, that somebody said something that there's not going to be any more Forsaken. Am I totally nuts, or you guys remember that?
I think, and this is just my thought, I think that perhaps maybe they were talking about that, and I vaguely remember the dream sequence where the I think it was only five or six Forsaken that were sitting around, and I'm not sure if it was Perrin or Egwene that was actually watching it, but I think they may have mentioned that. But as everyone knows, I mean, Moradin wasn't there. You know, the Dark One wasn't there. You know, so even though
that's a good point,
they could be just telling themselves that to make themselves feel better. You know, I mean, if this is true, I mean, that's a good argument for it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that makes sense. I like the theory, especially knowing that Mogadine has sort of been, in my opinion, Mogadine's been demoted from Forsaken. So if they can't be any more Forsaken, there can't be any less Forsaken. So
right, and they're
with that logic.
Then there certainly are not 13 Forsaken now, with the with the Balefire being thrown around against some of them.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's true.
So now I'll just go into the mailbox and get some feedback. And I'd like to thank Jordy for this one, and I'll just play it now.
Hey, this is Jordy, and I don't really have a question, but I was wondering about Avienda's babies. Maybe the odd thing about them is that they're going to be able to channel, because we know that in some societies, like the Seafolk, it can go generation by generation. Does this make sense, or is this just my weird way of thinking? Thanks.
So that's kind of interesting that possibly... none of, or all of Avienda's babies will be able to channel, and that would be the odd thing about them. I think that something that would be in the reverse maybe would be a little bit odder. Odder. I don't know if that's actually a word, but since both Rand and Avienda can both channel, I think that if none of the children can channel, that might be a better possibility.
I definitely think that could be. And I've been thinking about this for a while, in that quote, that's something odd about. I can't think really of anything that I can really make sense that would be odd. That's a really weird. That's an odd word to say, odd.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the context, it's so vague. Anything can be odd. I mean, the kids can come out with blonde hair. You never know. I mean, that would be odd, wouldn't it?
That would be odd. I think RJ has made a few very, very small allusions as to how the transfer of, you know, power, being able to wield Sidin or Sidar, he's made very few allusions to it. It's Brown Aja who came up with the theory, right? Brown Aja that they've culled the human race by gentling all the men and sending all the women to the tower so they don't breed. That because of that they've culled the race. That's the Brown Aja's theory. So it very well could be that it increases the likelihood that a baby will be able to wield the power if their parents were, but we don't know that. So I think RJ has left that vague so he's not tied down with it, you know? I think he'll be able to, you know, explore that however he wants to, and I imagine he's got an idea, because he always knows where he's going with these things. So I think he has an idea and a plan for the kids, and it could be to wield the power.
Yeah, I think it's actually, I don't really think it has anything to do with that, even though it's a good theory. I think it's going to be more of something along the lines of being a surrogate. We know Elaine obviously is having twins, and Avienda is going to have four. My thinking was that we haven't heard anything, which Min cannot obviously see herself to see any viewings about herself, but we haven't heard anything about Min having children. So maybe for some reason Avienda is like a surrogate, so she gives birth to two of Avienda's and Rand's and two of Min and Rand's. I don't know. That would be odd, definitely. So
that certainly would qualify as odd.
I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but that was just an idea that I had. But or it could have something to do with the power. So with RG, you never know.
And speaking of Elaine and the babies, Elaine is actually our character of the week. Character of the week this week. So getting on that.
What a transition!
Right, very good, very good. on that topic, Elaine and her two. Oh, what do you think is going to happen with that? I mean, do you think that she's going to have them before the last battle? Do you think it's going to Is it going to be like one of those things where Robert Jordan has six different storylines going on at the same time, which is great? Maybe she's having birth while everything is going on. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. That kind of goes into my theory with the children, with her children that she has. I think that she's going to have them right at the end, right while the big showdown's going on. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this theory, but there's a theory that Elaine's babies are actually Hunters of the Horn. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Siobhan and his sister Callion. And I really completely agree with it. And I'm just going to read like a small thing from the book. And it says, it's just explaining Siobhan and his sister. And Siobhan, the hunter behind his black mask, he was said to herald the end of ages, the destruction of what had been and the birth of what was to be. He and his sister, Callion, called the chooser, who rode red mast at his side. So I think it's kind of important that he wears a black mask and she wears a red, because in the prophecies it says that twice dawns the day when his blood is shed, once for mourning, once for birth. Red on black, the dragon's blood stains the rock of Sheogul. In the pit of doom shall his blood free men from the shadow. So to me, that's saying it's not Rand's blood, like I mentioned before about it not being literal, like his blood, but the blood of his family. I think that the children could be born there, and that's like the whole, not saying he's not going to die, I still kind of think he's going to live, but I think that that's what it is, and that's my theory.
Yeah,
you can call that my wacky theory, but no, it's not just okay. Mine. I've seen that around before, but I completely agree with it because I've thought it for a long time.
Yeah, I've seen that one there before. About Elaine's kids, I have a little bit of a crazy theory. Actually, probably could have used this as a crazy theory, but since we're having it as a discussion of the week, I'll use it now. I think that Elaine's kids are going to die. I think that that's going to be the big change for Rand. I think that's going to be the point where he really has to come to grips with his, you know, being hard, being iron, being so inflexible, being so, you know, what he's been talking about with Cad Swain and how she's trying to make him human again. I think that's where all of that's going to come to a head, where he's going to have to make choices, whether he's going to have to, you know, right now in his current mindset, if his kids died, he couldn't weep. But he's going to be able to weep. I think, Moraine is going to sort of teach him how to do that, and Cad Swain, and I think that's going to set him off, and it's going to give him some sort of inspiration or power or whatever hoopla. And he's going to be able to reach down deep and find that little bit and go over the top and take it all the way and do all the other, all the other nice little victory chance to defeat the Dark One. So that's my theory. It's a little weird. It's kind of vague, but it's a pretty vague topic. So I think I can get by with a vague theory.
That theory while we were talking about it, that theory actually makes a little more sense in as a parallel to a book that Wheel of Time parallels a lot and is very similar to, is Dune, where Paul Atreides, Muad'Dib, his first child is killed, and that's what actually drives him to actually rise to power and rise the way that he did with so much violence.
Oh, I've never read Dune or watched it or anything, so
I don't know.
Do you think that the children, because they have to be born, right? Because Min said that they're born healthy. So you think
she'll have them healthy. And then they'll be taken. I think actually, it says his blood on the rocks of Shale Ghul. Mm-hmm. I think his blood could be his kid's blood. And
well, that's what I thought, but I thought maybe they were going to be born. Dead. But it could be that too. Yeah.
I was thinking. Well, they have to be born, but after that, they can be taken from them after they're born healthy.
True.
Born healthy, snatched up, and taken to Shale Ghul to be sacrificed and all that stuff.
That would just make him, like, go insane.
Wow. That's true. It would make him go insane. It's very true. But he's already pretty close.
Right. Yes.
If he's not there already, so he's destined to go mad, as he's said to himself many times.
So maybe he won't have a whole litter of children popping around.
Who knows?
Poor Rand.
Who knows? But anyway, now we can get back to Elaine, because she's actually the character, not the twins. But I do want to say this, that Elaine is one of my favorite characters of all of the females, the female Aes Sedai, the powerful ones that are influencing the story. She is my favorite, and there are two big, big reasons why. The first reason is she's not like the normal Aes Sedai who are bickering and squabbling for power. Now, she's supporting Egwene, and she's, aligned herself with the rebels, but that's not where she's focusing all of her time and attention. Even whenever she's been talking about claiming Andor, she hasn't been claiming Andor for herself. She's been claiming it a little bit for her mother, because she believes she's doing it in honor of her, because she believes she's dead. But she's also doing it because she talks about, we need to get Andor ready for Tarmon Gaiden. And we know that Andor does play a big part in Tarmon Gaiden because of Elida's little foreseeing. Is that what it was called? Foreknowledge?
Her foretelling. But
foretelling.
I think that was about Rand, though. Like her foretelling.
It could have been.
At least that's how I always took it. I always took it because it said the royal line or something. So I always thought that because nobody knows that Rand is Tigraine's child.
Yeah.
So I always took it that way. But I still think that, I mean, I still agree with you that, yes,
yeah,
it's
she's
good
definitely
that she's getting it ready.
Yeah, as compared to the other women, I've made this rant several times before, but I'm going to make it short this time. Instead of sitting around arguing over a stupid tower, get out there and fight the Dark One, ladies. Okay, thank you. The other reason I like her is she differs from so many of the other strong female characters in that she is not rude and not, I don't know, there's a term I could use, I guess, but she's not mean whenever somebody disagrees with her. She is strong because she's led, you know, bred as a queen, but whenever somebody disagrees with her, as Nynaeve would do, would say, "Oh, you dumb woolhead, just do it! I'm gonna beat you with my stick!" She says, "Oh, well, can't you see that this is the reason why?" And, you know, and she explains herself, and she's not, you know, she doesn't call people names, and she's not rude. I think the excellent example would be whenever she is apologizing to Matt in the bar after their night drinking with Birgit, and, you know, explaining, you know, going through all that, and how Nynaeve just absolutely hates to do it because I just can't stand this man. I hate him. Elaine doesn't hate him. She's a little embarrassed that she happened to be, you know, that she didn't handle things properly back in Tyr, but she's still very willing to apologize, and she doesn't take it that hard. So it's very rare among the Wheel of Time women to have that character displayed. So I salute you for that, Elaine, and I hope your kids don't die, but I think they will anyway. Anyway, that's why I like Elaine.
I always actually, I like Elaine, which is kind of weird, but I always thought that she is who I most like, which not, I don't know why, because I'm not royal or, you know, I'm nothing like that, but I just seem to relate to her the most, and she's
a
character
princess,
that...
You're a princess, Carrie.
Oh, don't let my husband hear you say that.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
No, I don't mean that in a...
I
just,
know.
He'll tease me, but...
She seems to me to be out of all the female characters in the book, she seems to me the most quote unquote down to earth and, you know, and the most normal.
That's I was just gonna say those
the
exact
most
words.
Everyday
down to
kind
earth.
Of person. Yeah, the kind of female character that people can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
As if someone like their sister or them, even themselves, and someone that everyone can see themselves
they're
at
not
in
afraid
that way
of
in her place. Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I do think that Min is down to earth too, but considering where Elaine has come from and all of you would really think that she would be this hoity-toity, snooty girl like Matt seems to think she is, you know, in the beginning, but she's not. She like you said, she listens to everybody, like the low common people, just as well as the nobles. Like, she would take into consideration what somebody's saying, regardless of who they are. She doesn't pass judgment on them just based on their looks or who they are. I think that she's, I guess,
it's
fair
true.
would be.
Yeah, she's gonna be a good queen. She's very just, very very competent, and she's my favorite. She's gonna do well.
Okay, guys, it's time for us to wrap up. So if you have any feedback or just any information that you would like to send our way, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dragonmount.com.
And don't forget, coming back next week, we are going to have a new Character of the Week. This is actually going to be sort of a different approach to the Character of the Week. Instead of just picking a character and talking about it, we're all going to be talking about different characters. Well, probably. We could be. We're going to pick our favorite character of all, and talk about why this person is awesome. And say why our character is better than everybody else's character. But you can tell us what your character is. You can go and email us what your favorite character is, and if you have a particularly interesting thing to say about it, we might read what you say on the air. So be thinking about who your favorite character is, and be ready to hear ours.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to our podcast this week. We definitely appreciate all the great feedback we've received so far. Don't forget, DragonCon, we're going to be doing the podcast live as long as we get everything that we need. So we'll hope to see everyone there. And again, thanks for listening this week, and we will hear you will hear from us next week.
Take care, everybody.
Goodbye. Good night.
The Fourth Age is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. Fourth Age music is provided by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.net.